All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, second week of May edition. I am Bobby Fenton. Thank you for joining us today. Of course, the big news is the schedule that's out, and it's been out for a few days now. And we've got a few other things going on here, but the main theme, I think, of everything going on right now that we're going to get into on the show today is hope, because you know, there was all this speculation about how the NFL schedule was going to look based on, you know, first the rumor was blocks, where the first 4 weeks would be all of the AFC, NFC games, because, hey, they can cancel those if they need to, or they can move them if they need to. Then there was other rumors about different types of structuring. Point is, NFL came out with a pretty regular schedule, and there are a few things built into it that we'll talk about, but they seem, and they're saying, that they, for all intents and purposes, are going to be proceeding as normal this fall. And it's not just the NFL. There's been news leaking out about Major League Baseball and their proposed plan to get things going in July, or at least the thing that the owners cooked up. Players haven't had any way to weigh in on that yet. And other leagues are doing the same thing. We've had a little bit of hope with golf coming up next week, or next month, I should say, although it's not that far off, and some other things. So again, basically just hope. There is hope that things are going to be maybe not normal soon, but at least there'll be something on our television sets in front of us. And there was a UFC fight this past weekend. I'm not terribly into that, but again, it was just nice to see an event put on that went okay without any real negative consequences that seemed to have come out of it. And it just gives you hope that there can be more things like that as kind of a bridge to complete normalcy, which we also hope isn't far down the road. But anyway, thank you for joining us. Of course, the Free Stretch always brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford and our friend, the GM Sean Sullivan. Bill Curry Ford, the first thing you should do, and you may already have done this, if you're thinking about buying a car right now, is just to go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. And remember, Curry is with an I-E on the end, C-U-R-R-I-E. Go to BillCurryFord.com, check out all the inventory, brand new, pre-owned, used, a wide range of vehicles, and they're not just all Fords. They've got a bunch of things. But the point is, you can see it all on the website. Get an idea for what you like. Get an idea for what you think is in your price range. Then go down and check it out. If you talk to Sean Sullivan, if you talk to any of the great salespeople there, they'll take you all over the lot. Social distancing is not a problem. They'll go through all the procedures and everything. So the point is, you can do all this right now. And in addition to that, because of what's going on, they're going to give you a chance, 0% financing, and you can delay your first payment for 3 months. It's something that they're doing because of the whole thing going on and everything else. It's not necessarily a great time for people all over, but for the people that are intending to buy a car, it is a great time to buy a car. It really is. And Bill Curry Ford is looking to make you a deal. You can go check out what they have. Again, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. After that, you can go there in person. They're a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, right there, just a little north of Hillsboro on the east side of the road. They've been there serving the Tampa Bay area for nearly 60 years now, Tampa's first family of automobile sales. Bill Curry and our friend Sean Sullivan, if you mention me or the Free Stretch or Joe Bucks Fan, he'll throw the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing. So this past Thursday, you know, all the hype, all the buildup, the NFL over the years has done a masterful job with getting every single thing that happens on their calendar, whether it's on a football field or off, to be an event. Whether it's the Combine, which has turned into a big TV event, free agency, of course, the draft, all of these things. Well, the schedule release is the other big thing. And I've told the story before on this show, but, you know, as a kid, and it wasn't announced, or maybe it wasn't, I just wasn't paying attention, but there was no internet, there was no anything. You know, when I was a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s, one day, just in the middle of the spring sometime, without warning, you grab the paper, and I always got the newspaper. My mom always got both papers, the Tribune and the Times, delivered to our house back when we had two papers, which I miss. But anyway, the point is, like, I'd always, like, eat a bowl of cereal or a bowl of cookies or something. I'd spread the newspaper out, and I still do these things. And one day, you'd just go get the paper, and the Bucks' schedule would be on the front page. And it would be like, whoa, here's our schedule! And you didn't, or at least I didn't know, like, who the opponents were going to be. Like, the formula wasn't well publicized. Like, now you know all the opponents, you know, way in advance, and you have an idea of things. You know, it used to be just, oh man, let me see our schedule. And all you knew was that, hey, we're playing the division teams twice each. And then the other, back then, used to play eight division games. The other eight games, they could be anything. We didn't know what the hell they were going to be, and we didn't know when they were going to be and all that stuff. But it was always kind of like Christmas a little bit, getting the newspaper, seeing the schedule. First thing I would always do when we got that schedule was cut it out. I'd go grab the scissors and cut it out, and wham, up on the fridge it would go. In April, or whenever it usually was around this time of year. And it would stay there all summer long. I'd look at it every time I went to the fridge. And then once the season started, I'd always write the scores, like a little W for a win, little L for a loss in the scores. And that was the precursor to what I ended up doing and what I do on this show with you guys, which is the fridge schedules that I type up every year, where we do the team logos and everything, and we type it up, and I print it out on this, you know, nice 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And you will be able to do that again this year. The last two seasons we've done it, we've had great response. People email me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com saying, Bobby, can I have a fridge schedule? It is my pleasure. So what I do is I just save the file. I send it to you, and you can print it out. I recommend color. Now, I'm not going to do it just yet because of the uncertainty. You know, if there are changes made to the schedule after the season starts, like sometimes you get hurricane delays or games postponed or whatever, you know, I'll cross it off and I'll rewrite it, you know, somewhere else on the schedule. But if they change things before, that still gives me time to retype it because I like to have a nice clean look on the fridge. So as we get closer to August, and if it looks like things are going to be getting going the way the NFL hopes they will and the way we all hope they will, then I'll go ahead and type it up. But in the meantime, we're going to stand pat and just look at it. And again, you know, hopefully none of this gets changed too much, or even if it does get changed, it's not anything drastic. But the point is, like, that was a big day every year. So Thursday night, I was all fired up. And of course, the leaks came out a little bit in advance, you know, like they always do. Some were accurate, some were not. We've got the schedule, is the point. So speaking of things that are different now than they were in the 80s and 90s, another thing I remember when I was a kid about looking at those schedules is every single year, and this is, you know, I was a kid, I was born in 1980, so through the mid, late 80s is when I started to, you know, obviously understand what I was watching and pay attention, and all through the 90s, all the way through, you know, college into the 2000s. First thing I would do every single year, do we have any night games at all? Because that was a huge deal for me. And I think it's a generational thing. Like, if you're of a certain age, although I guess it doesn't matter that much because most of the Bucks history is like this. So no matter how old you are, being on primetime is a novelty. But if you're born like right around where I was, your entire childhood, you never saw a single Bucks Monday night football game. You'd sometimes get the ESPN Sunday night or the TNT. Remember how they used to split the season in half? And like the first half of the season was the TNT Sunday Nitro game. And then after like week 8 or 9 or whatever it was, it would switch over to ESPN. But there was always the Sunday night game. And the Bucks would occasionally grab one of those. Like every once in a while, they'd get one of those. And it was like a really big deal. Like, oh man, we're on Sunday night football on TNT or whatever. And that's what I would look at, like, every year. And every year I thought, hey, yeah, I didn't understand how it worked with, like, TV ratings and things like that. I just thought they tried to give all the teams night games, like, to take turns. Like, as, you know, when you're a 9-year-old kid, that's how you think. Like, oh, well, we haven't had a Monday night game in a few years, so I'll bet we have one because all the other teams have had them, so it should be our turn now. Like, that was what I was thinking. I didn't realize that nobody gave a crap about the Bucks and that nobody cared about Tampa Bay and that we were an afterthought nationally, and that we still would be to this very day, even after winning the Super Bowl, if it weren't for Tom Brady being here right now. But he is here. So my point is, that's what I would do. And every year I'd be like, puzzled, this young 10-year-old boy. I'd be like, why aren't we on Monday Night Football? Like, the last 5 years we weren't on it. And I'd do the math in my head, like, well, let's see, there's like 15 Monday Night Football games a year, or 16 times 2. So that's 30-something teams, but there's only 28 teams at the time. So I was like, how could we not be on this year if we weren't on last year? That means other teams have been on it a bunch of times without us being on it. The Bucks were not on Monday Night Football from 1982 through 1998 when I was 18. But that's what I would do every year. I'd say, okay, what's our Monday night game? Thinking, just little naive me, oh, we got to have one this year, and we never did. And so I think it kind of became like a mythical thing for me, like playing on Monday Night Football, like it was this unbelievable thing. So it's kind of cool, even now as I'm approaching age 40, that I can still get giddy when I see the schedule. And we got, I got it right here, five of them, okay? The Thursday Nighter, two Monday Nighters, and two Sunday Nighters. And Sunday's kind of become a bigger deal than Monday Night Football, which I think is a shame. I liked them both, but I always liked the way it was, where Sunday was the cable one and Monday was the big network, Monday Night Football on ABC. But either way, we got five of them. And again, even after we finally started getting on it in the late 90s through the 2000s, there's been another drought lately. I mean, not the way it used to be, where they literally never were on it, but they're rarely on it now. And it's been kind of, I mean, they've got five appearances this year. That's more than the last three seasons combined. And it's the maximum. You can't, I mean, five is what the limit is for teams in the NFL. And so it's pretty exciting to see that. And the Buccaneers, in addition to being on primetime five times, have a few other like national games of the week in the 425 slot. The opener against the Saints is like that. But it's just exciting. And listen, if you're like me, you know, you could play them all Sunday at 1. You could play them Sunday whenever. I mean, the main thing is for the Bucs to win. I mean, that's what we all care about. If you're listening to this, you're like me. You're a Bucs fan. But you're damn right it's more fun when it's at night. And you know everybody's watching. And it just feels like more of an event. I have, you know, if I call my buddies up for a Sunday at 1 o'clock game, and I say, hey, we're all going to come over and watch the game. They might be, okay, yeah, we'll do it. But every time there's been a primetime game, and again, maybe it's because they've been so rare, every time there's been a primetime game in the last few years, we've all gotten together at somebody's house for it. Like, I don't have to ask twice. Everybody's like, oh, hell yeah, dude, you bring the beer, I'll bring the... Like, everybody's just 100% in. When it's Monday Night Football, when it's Sunday Night Football. I remember the Sunday Nighter against the Cowboys a few years ago. You know, obviously the Thursday Nighter last year was against... Or not last year, 2 years ago, I think, against Tom Brady and the Patriots, which was like the only time he had played here until this coming season. You know, these are event-type games, and they're excuses for people to get together. You wake up with a little extra hop in your step. Like, if I told you the Bucs have a game today, and it's a 1 p.m. game, you'd be like, all right, Bucs game. But what if I told you it was an 8:30 Sunday night game on national TV? Same opponent, same everything, but you'd be more excited, right? Of course you would be. And we're going to get a lot of that this season. My neighbor, I have a neighbor who's an ex-Buccaneer cheerleader. I still call them swashbucklers, but she's an ex-Buccaneer cheerleader. And I was talking to her the other day, and she's like, oh, yeah. She's like, even back when I was cheering, she said, it's just different. The light, something about the way the lights just reflect off the helmets and the crowd. She's like, and plus it's obviously not as hot for the cheerleaders. And she was like, oh, I couldn't get enough of those when I was cheering. And I was like, yeah, me either. Like, we're all fired up for it. So I'll tell you a quick story about the first Monday Night Football game the Bucs were on in my coherent lifetime. Like I said, they were on when I was like 2 or 3 years old or whatever it was. And then they weren't on again until I was 18. So 1997 was my senior year in high school. That was the first time the Bucs had a winning record in my life, senior year of high school. And we all remember what a great year that was, the last year at the Sombrero and all that. Well, then that meant in 1998, finally, they were going to get a little bit of love and start being shown on primetime a little bit. And they did. They had a Monday night game scheduled. It was early December, a Monday night game, and it was against Brett Favre and the Packers. And they had actually had a Sunday nighter earlier that year against at the time, it was the Tennessee Oilers. In fact, I believe it was the first game they ever lost at Raymond James Stadium, because 98 was the first year, and they won their first few at home. But then in 1998, mid-season, they played the Oilers, and Air McNair and the Titans, or what would be called the Titans, eventually beat them on Sunday night. But Sunday night was one thing. This was Monday night. And Monday night football, I'd never seen before. So it was the first Monday, I think, in December of 1998. So in 1998, I was a freshman in college. I went my first year of college, even though I went to UF, my first year I stayed home and went to USF, and I transferred to UF. So in the fall of 1998, I was a freshman at USF, and it just so happened, you know, almost all my classes were regular daytime college classes, but I took this one class, I believe it was calculus, actually, And it was on Monday evenings at like 6:30. And it was like a night class. And that whole the whole idea of that was so novel to me coming out of high school. I was like, oh, they have classes at 6:30? So I took one. And then the Bucks schedule, Monday night game was like at 8:30 at the time. And then it moved to 9, back to 8. But it was at 8:30 in 1998. So I had a class at 6:30, and it was a two-hour class. And the first Bucks Monday night game of my lifetime was at 8:30 on this first Monday in December. That normally wouldn't be that big of a deal, except this was the final of those calculus classes, which means what? We were taking our final exam just literally an hour and a half or so before the first Bucks Monday night game of my lifetime. So that was a little bit of a dilemma. So I don't know how many of you did this in college, or you could even do it in high school. I remember doing this quite a bit because I'm always a big fan of knowing what the scenarios are going in. I'm a big scenarios guy. So you remember how they tell you, okay, like 30% of your grade is going to be tests. 10% of your grade is going to be quizzes. Another 30 is going to be the midterm exam, and another 30 is going to be the final exam. Like, they would break it down like that. You all remember that, whether it was college or high school or whatever. So going into the final exam, you could do the math and calculate exactly what your grade was right now without that 30%. And then you could say, okay, well, if I get X grade on the exam, I get a B for the semester. And if I get X, you know, other grade, or I get Y other grade, I get B plus. And if I get Z, oh, I get an A minus. You know, you could calculate every single threshold you needed for each letter grade. Because the letter grade's all that matters, depending on the grading scale. Like, if a B is 80 through 89, in my lazy ass, just get by mind, hey, and I just need to get a B in the class or an A in the class. I don't care if it's an 81 or an 84 or an 87. They just put B on that report card. That's what I'm looking to get. Or A, whatever the scenario was. Obviously, you want A's. But in this particular case, I think I needed something. I was going to get either an A minus, a B plus, or a B. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but I needed something really, really good. I needed like a 93 or better on the exam to get the full complement. And then it was like 30 points back to the next one. So if I just got a 63 on the exam, I got, you know, a B or whatever, and just okay. So I go to take the exam, dressed in my game. I'm wearing my Bucks collared shirt. I'm like going straight from the game, or straight from this test at USF up in North Tampa to Raymond James Stadium. And I don't want to miss any of it. You know, it's Monday Night Football. I want to be there for the whole thing, the anthem, the player introductions, all that. So I'm like, I got to get out of here by like, you know, 7:30 at the latest, just to make sure I have time to drive down there with traffic, park, walk to the stadium. You know, my family all had season tickets. They were all already there. And I'm thinking, I got like an hour to do this, and that's it. So I remember like getting in there for the exam, and after about like four or five questions, I'm like, okay, I'm not getting a 93 here. My mind's not where it needs to be. Let me just get this done. I know I'll be able to get a 63 on it, and let me get the hell out of here. So I didn't Christmas tree it exactly, but I blazed through that exam, made sure I hit my number, got in the car, and just flew down Interstate 275, got over to Raymond James Stadium in time. It was a great game. I think Warren Sapp sacked Brett Favre like two or three times in the game. Crowd was incredible. It was everything I thought it would be. Sometimes you hype stuff up and then it's not as big of a deal once you actually experience it. No, my first Monday Night Football game, Bucks-Packers in 1998, was awesome. I couldn't get enough of it, and I was just so happy. And it's one of my favorite memories from college. Now, would I have liked to have had the A instead of the B? Sure. But now, 20 years later, let's be honest, what's a better memory? If I had gotten an A instead of a B, which ultimately would not have changed my life in any way, or having that memory of that first Monday Night Football game, you're damn right it's the Monday Night Football game. And that's the power of Monday Night Football. It's the power of primetime. That's the power of the lights and the crowd. And we're going to get to experience that again, like I said, five different times this year. But it's not just the primetime games. Let's talk about the schedule real quick. And I'm not going to go game by game, win-loss, win-loss. That's the dumbest thing ever. I used to do that when I was 10. I'm not going to do that now. But looking at the schedule, one of the big things people have been talking about since it came out, and again, this just goes to show, you know, the whole Tom Brady phenomenon, let me just say this real quick. It's great. I mean, he hasn't played it down yet. We don't know how good he's going to be. But it's just great as far as the attention goes. But don't forget, for one second, they don't care about you, they don't care about us, they care about him, okay? And when he's gone, the Bucks will go right back to being a team no one gives a crap about, they'll kick dirt on our face, they'll ignore us. That's just the way it is. But I thought it was funny, the schedule came out, week one at New Orleans, 4:25 p.m., one of the toughest games on our schedule, and it comes in the opener. And again, that's great, that's fine, but most people around the country wouldn't give two bleeps about this, except now we've got Tom Brady, so all of a sudden, the national cavalry comes in to white knight for the Bucks and defend them against the horrible scheduling. Skip Bayless weighed in, said, "This is an atrocity. I can't believe you make Tom Brady play his most challenging game first when he hasn't any prep time, hasn't had a chance to be with Bruce Arians that long." Mike Tannenbaum of ESPN, former general manager in the NFL, Kyle Brandt of NFL Network, on and on and on. There was a whole list of people going, "I can't believe they did this to the Bucs. I can't believe what an injustice this is." And really, they mean they can't believe they did this to Tom Brady, because again, they don't care about the Bucs. But they're all up in arms, like, how could they make the Bucs do this in the first game? It's too soon. That game should have been later in the year. And actually, it's not a bad thing. Thomas Bassinger broke the schedule down. He pointed out, and he was right, you know, everybody acts like having that Saints game first is a big disadvantage because of the weird offseason this year, and there's no mini camps. Tom Brady hasn't been able to go to one Buck, hasn't been able to talk to Bruce Arians, on and on and on. But, you know, the same's true for everybody. And the Saints, over the years, in the last five seasons, they've played 40 home games, eight a year times five. They are 27-13 at home. That's really good. Good teams are hard to beat at home, of course. And the Superdome is no exception. But in September, just September, okay, in the last 5 years, they're 3-5 at home. And actually, two of those times were the Bucks, who have gotten them early a couple times. A couple years ago in 2018, that was when Jameis was suspended and Fitzpatrick came in and had like one of the games of his life. And the Bucks beat the Saints 48-40 in week one. There was another one a couple years or 3 years before that. So I don't think it's a big deal to play the Saints in the first game on the road. That is a game on your schedule. Like, if you don't play it, you can play it early, you can play it late, whenever. And people say, "Oh, you're sentencing them to 0-1. Well, first of all, I don't grant that premise. And second of all, even if so, I mean, you could lose that game in October or November just as easily as you could lose it in September, and you could also win it. And early in the year, the Saints at home haven't been as formidable as they have been in later months. It doesn't mean it'll be that way this year, but it was just something worth pointing out. I thought it was a good point. But I did also think it was pretty funny to see all these national guys who, I mean, I guarantee you they would never have even looked at the Bucks schedule. Even when the season was going on, you'd have to tell them who the Bucks were playing every week. But now that we got Brady, they all jump on the Bucks schedule. "Oh, I can't believe they made him play the Saints." You know, hey, thanks for the help, guys. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. But really, it's fine. And you can go back to not caring in a couple of years once Brady is not here anymore. In the meantime, let's wait till we play a few games here and see how this whole thing actually goes. But they get that opener, and then Carolina in week two, so two division games right off the bat, and then it kind of goes from there. So what are some hidden things about the schedule that maybe don't jump right out at you when you look at the paper, but that are in there? So here's one thing that didn't work out great for the Bucks this year, and it's something that nobody used to pay a lot of attention to. And of course, this was before the proliferation of lots of Thursday night games and things like that. But now you've got more games on different days of the week. You've got Thursday, Sunday, Monday, the occasional Saturday games once you get after the college football season ends in December. So you've got a lot of times what's called rest differential. One team is playing on the normal week's rest. One team is on a short week coming off a Monday night game. Or they're off a long week because they played a Thursday night game. Or whatever it is. So rest differential is basically the difference in how many days of rest you've had since your last game versus how many days of rest your opponent has had since your last game. On this metric, the Buccaneers' schedule did not do them many favors this year. They have the fifth worst net rest differential in the league. They have six games, which is tied for the league lead, in which they play on less rest than their opponent. And that is not just most in the NFL this year, but it's tied for the most since we went to this divisional format, starting with the 2002 season. And again, you know, when you have all these primetime games, and they're very cool, but The two Monday night games result in short weeks the next week. One of the big games of the season is the Chiefs, right? Like, we're all fired up for that Chiefs home game, and it's probably not too big of a deal. But they play a Monday nighter at home 6 days before that, so the Chiefs are going to be coming off a full week. The Bucs will be on short rest. Again, it's not the end of the world, but these are little things that do matter. And the Bucs have six of those. They also get two teams coming off a bye, which is something that the NFL has tried to pay more attention to. There used to be disparities in that that people didn't really account for. Like, one time a team had like 4 weeks where a team they played was coming off their bye. And the NFL's done more to pay attention to that and try and make it close to even where, okay, maybe you play a couple teams off their bye, but 3, 4, or 5 is too many. The Bucs have a couple of those. And, of course, they only have 1 week in the whole season where they are on more rest than their opponent. That is off of their bye week when they play the Vikings in week 14 after having the bye in week 13. Late bye this year for the Bucs, by the way. And normally they have one earlier. It's not actually a bad thing. You know, people think, oh, you want the bye a little earlier than week 9 or week 10, whatever it is. And the Bucs, in this case, is week 13. And just for Tom Brady and Gronkowski, at least, you know, 5 of the 6 Pats titles that Brady won when he was in New England, the Patriots had the bye in week 9 or later in that season. And I'm not saying that means anything necessarily. It's just an interesting thought. But it's not necessarily a bad thing if you can get that far and feel okay. Then having that late bye can kind of set you up for that stretch run and for the playoffs a little bit. One other thing I noticed that I was happy about, you know, the Bucs play the AFC West this year. That means 2 home games against AFC West teams. And one of those comes against the Los Angeles Chargers. So when you have these West Coast teams, and the other one's against the Chiefs, when you have these West Coast teams, it's a disadvantage for them to play at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And numbers have shown this over the years. West Coast teams playing an East Coast team on the road where it's a 1 o'clock local kickoff, that's 10 a.m. for the East Coast teams, they don't do as well against the spread. They don't do as well overall. I mean, that's one of the most commonly known long-time betting trends if you follow that type of stuff. So the Chargers game in Week 4 is a 1 p.m. kickoff. That's a good thing. I mean, a lot of times they'll put those at 4 if they can help it to try and even that out, but they get the Chargers at 1. Of course, the Chiefs game is a 4:25 game, a national TV game of the week type thing. That shouldn't be as big of a deal, but I was glad to see that. I was also glad to see that they don't have any extended road legs. They do have back-to-back road games twice against the Raiders and Giants, and that second one on the Giants game is a Monday night game, so they'll have a little bit longer to prepare. And then they have back-to-back road games in the final two of the final 3 weeks of the season with the Falcons and the Lions. And we don't know when that Lions game is going to be yet because it could be a Saturday like the Texans game. This was this past year. They move a couple games to Saturday, so we'll see about that. But overall, the rest differential, I think, is the most important, underrated thing. And so I'm not saying I'm worried about it. I would have preferred the Bucs not rank in the top 5, or if you will, bottom 5 of the league because of it. But either way, it is what it is, and that's one of the byproducts of having a lot of games on odd days. But they do have a pretty good, compared to last year especially, a pretty good draw here. As far as strength of schedule, which does matter, obviously, and not necessarily because of a first place, last place, third place. That's way overrated because you play only 2 of your 16 games are based on that, and teams are different every year. So you might play a last place schedule, and the team that you played because you finished last and they finished last in their division, they might be a first place team this year. You never know. But overall strength of schedule, if you go just by win-loss of all the teams you play combined from the previous year, that's kind of not an accurate measure because, again, teams change so much. What's a little bit better of a measure, and it's not rock solid or anything, and it's hardly scientific, but if you go by win expectation for the next season, if you just go to any website, whether it's Bovada or Oddshark or Bet Online or whatever it is you want to do, and they've all got the futures bets up there for the teams that you're going to play, and they've got an over-under, so you can bet on the Bucks, you know, plus or minus 9 wins or whatever. I don't know what it is. You know, over-under 9.5. Anyway, looking at that is actually a more accurate way to look at your schedule than say, oh, we play a 12-4 team from last year. That 12-4 team from last year could be a 7-9 team this year. You know, that stuff is very, very unstable from year to year. I mean, you look at the Chiefs, yeah, they're probably going to be good again, the defending Super Bowl champs, Patrick Mahomes. But injuries and things like, you know, what if Mahomes gets hurt and he doesn't play in that game? Who knows? Or things like that. But overall, if you take the looking ahead view of the schedule, the Bucs schedule is actually one of the top 10 easier ones in the National Football League, and especially their road slate. They don't go on the road after that New Orleans game in week one. Their road games aren't terribly intimidating. It's a slate of teams at Denver, which Denver's always a tougher road trip. The altitude does have an effect. That's another long-term betting trend that has shown some consistency. And Denver will probably be better this year than they were last year. But you're at Denver, at the Bears, at Las Vegas, the Raiders, at the Giants, at the Falcons, and at the Lions. I mean, none of those make you go, oh, man, I don't know if the Bucs go on the road. You know, the Saints game in week one, that's a tough road environment against a really good team anyway. After that, it doesn't get too bad. And weather-wise, it doesn't get bad either. Their December road games are both in domes in Atlanta and Detroit. They play in Carolina in November. That's not too bad. They go to New York the first weekend of November. That's a Monday night game. Could be a little chilly, but I don't think there's any weather issues here with that or anything like that. So overall, good schedule, fun schedule, and now let's just hope it's a real schedule. The NFL didn't do all the things that, you know, we'd heard rumors about, like putting all the AFC, NFC games in weeks 1-4. We had heard that was possible, making like blocks that they could shift around if they needed to move. They did do a couple little things that they built into this that aren't necessarily noticeable, but if you read about it, then it makes sense. Everybody's week two opponent, for example, is the same bye week as the team that you're playing. So the Bucs and Carolina both have the week 13 bye, which means if for whatever reason you need to move week, you can move week one to the end of the year, you can move week two into the bye week for future. There's little things like that. Weeks 3 and 4 are all non-divisional games, so if you had to lop 2 weeks off, maybe you could lop those off. So they kind of did some little things like that to account for the virus and all that stuff and the potential of not having fans or not being able to play at all or whatever it is. And we don't know any of that yet. There's just no way to know. But either way, I'm putting this, which I printed out off the internet, up on my fridge for now. Like I said, when things get a little more into focus and we can have a better idea that, yes, this is going to happen, I'll make the fridge schedules and you can email me and ask me for one and I will get it to you. And you can always email me either way. I love hearing from you guys. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. So one other bit of news on this week in quarantine. Of course, everybody's still at home with teams. A couple of other leagues, the NHL and the NBA, are kind of soft opening their facilities and players are coming in, not the whole team or anything, but like guys are able to come in and shoot some hoops, you know, on like opposite ends of the court and just, you know, they're trying to do these things and stay within all these guidelines, although they really don't, you know, just if you're going to go to the facility, just play ball. But either way, NFL's not one of those yet. You can't go to one Buck place. Tom Brady's not over at one Buck place getting work in. None of the players are. So one of the big problems with professional athletes with this whole thing has been the ability to work out, because obviously that's a big part of being a professional athlete, and obviously they don't have access to their team facilities, and all the regular gyms are closed as well. So especially with football, you know, which is not that it's the only sport where lifting weights is a thing, but it's got a special emphasis there. And a lot of these guys can't do it. So the NFL has approved, and this is from Anthony Paroli, the Bucs strength and conditioning coach. He said the NFL has approved a $1,500 per player limit that the teams can actually send them stuff. And I guess, I don't know, you know, they have a salary cap on weightlifting equipment, but the NFL said you can send guys equipment to their houses up to $1,500 per player. And they can get something going there. And in fact, Joe wrote an article on it on Joe Bucs Fan talking about it if you want to check it out. It's Team Glazer goes all in on player home fitness equipment. And the Glazers, according to Paroli, the Bucs strength and conditioning coach, did not hesitate in the least. They got the credit card out. They said, get these guys whatever they need, send it out. I mean, there's a lot of guys, you know, $1,500 per guy. And obviously for someone like the Glazers, it's not that big of a deal. But just nice to see that they're not getting greedy with the purse strings or anything like that. Now, $1,500 doesn't sound like a lot. Now, a lot of people were commenting, oh, there's not much you can do with $1,500. Hey, I have a home gym. I built a home gym, and I'm still building a home gym because it's not something you do all at once, but I started building a home gym 10 years ago, about 8 years ago, when I had my first son because I thought, hey, it might be hard to get to the gym now, and now that I'm having a kid, maybe I should just have something in the garage. So I got a rack, I got a barbell, I got weight plates, I got rubber mats. And when I say home gym, I know people say, oh, I have a home gym, and you go in their back room and they have like a stationary bike, a treadmill, and like a couple of 25-pound dumbbells. That's not a home gym. That's a workout area, and that's fine. You should have anything you can possibly have. I have a home gym. You can, with barbells, free weight, everything you could possibly want. I even got gymnastics rings, mounted them to the ceiling of my garage. I mean, I can do anything. Like, literally anything you can do in an NFL strength training facility, I can do in my garage with a couple of minor exceptions. I don't have, you know, quite the level of equipment they have. But this whole thing, and again, it's still being built. Like, every other month, I'm like, okay, I think I'm going to get one of these now. And I move something in. Sometimes I take stuff out that I don't really use. And the whole thing costs less than $1,000. And I have a pretty nice one by most standards. So $1,500 to me, even if you're starting completely from scratch, is plenty for each guy. And hopefully they won't need these for that long. Hopefully they'll be back in their facility soon. But I would question any pro athlete. I know their lives are transient. See, this is the thing. I didn't want to get a home gym going until I knew I had a place of my own that wasn't, you know, you can't do it living in an apartment or a condo. But for these guys that have houses and stuff, every professional athlete that owns a house should have a home gym in that house already. I can't believe any pro athlete wouldn't. It's one of the single best decisions I have ever made, and I'm just a regular weekend warrior Joe Average over here. I'm not a pro athlete, but I mean, to me, it's prohibitive. Like, how could you not have a home gym if you're a professional athlete and you have a garage or some area where you can do it, which most of them do? And again, you can get a rack on Amazon, you can get the barbell a few places online, used or new, and that's probably the pricier. The rack and the barbell, the two most expensive things. The weights you can get it plated again, those vary in quality. If you ever want to build a home gym, please email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Like, if you're thinking about this, and there's tons of stuff online, tons of resources. You don't necessarily just need me, but I'd be happy to give you a little bit of advice and on places where to find things. Play It Again was a big resource. You can get stuff on Amazon. $1,500 is plenty. I mean, it's not going to be anywhere near. You can probably do it for less than $1,000. And if you just want to start out real basic, you can do it for $500-$600. Just remember the thing. I mean, don't let anybody shame you, including me. Anything is better than nothing. Because I can't tell you how nice it is to be able to work out anytime I want at the house. Don't have to worry about the hours. Don't have to worry about other people using the equipment. Don't have to worry about cleaning up. Not that I don't clean up, but you can rack the weights any way you want. You cannot rack the weights at all. You can sweep the floor when you want to. You cannot sweep the floor at all. It's completely up to you. You can dress. You know, I can't tell you how often I lift in things that I would not be able to lift in if I was going to a public gym. And I like public gyms, by the way. I'm not one of these. Listen, even though I have this gym, I still pay $10 a month because it's such a great price to go to Crunch, which I don't do that often, but I'll, you know, 3-4 times a month just because I need to get out. Sometimes going to the gym is a good thing. Here's the other thing with a home gym. There are pitfalls. When I go to the gym, like to Crunch and just go, I'm there, I get my workout, and I leave, and I'm not there for any other reason. When you work out at home, and it's very easy to procrastinate, it's very easy. Let's say I'm going to do, you know, squat today. I'm going to squat 3 sets of 10. It's very easy to squat 1 set of 10, go back in the kitchen, dick around in there, and then 15, 20 minutes later come back and do your next set. That is not how to work out. You need to stay on it. You need to squat your set or bench or whatever it is you're doing. Then definitely rest a few minutes. And in that few minutes, though, you know, maybe you're jumping rope. Maybe you're doing some push-ups. Maybe you're just resting, but either way, after 3, 4, 5 minutes, go back and hit that next set. I can spread a workout over 2 hours where I barely did anything when I'm at home because of all the distractions and the ability to go inside. And so that part is hard. You have to be mentally disciplined to work out at home where you say, I'm working out for this hour. I'm going in the garage. I'm not going back in there for anything unless it's a drink of water for more than a minute or two. That part is hard. Whereas when you go to the gym, there's nothing else to do but work out. So that's what you do. But I recommend it for anybody. If any of you out there have ever thought, hey, it'd be nice to have a home gym, or hey, I want to start getting into fitness, what should I do? You know, this is something that, just look at some research, look at some things that you can maybe get done, whatever your price range is, whatever the facilities you have. If my garage is a two-car garage, my wife parks on one side, I could park in the other, but no. I'd rather park outside, and one half of the garage is strictly the workout area. It's been a huge, hey, my wife has a personal trainer at her gym, which is also closed. So what happened? Everybody's missing out on working out. Not my wife. We just pay the personal trainer to come here during this whole quarantine thing. And a quarantine thing is obviously a completely extreme situation. That's not why you should build a home gym. I don't anticipate this being an issue for, you know, years down the road, but it's just a great thing to have in general, whether it's a few dumbbells, whether it's a full rack. I could do a whole show on, you know, squatting and deadlifting and all the things that most people probably don't do. And when they think of working out, they probably think of like doing curls or doing a Zumba class. But everybody from a middle schooler on up to a 90-year-old woman, okay, male or female, everybody benefits from getting stronger and putting a barbell in their hands. And maybe one day when things are slower and there's less going on, maybe I'll do a show about that. But I recommend it to all of you, and good for the Bucks for getting everybody their $1,500 worth of equipment. I mean, how great is it to be a pro athlete and your boss just, hey, what, we got to send you stuff. What do you want? You can just go through the catalog. Oh, I mean, come on, man. I had to grind to get this thing built, and they're sending people $1,500 worth of stuff. Like, it's I could build a Taj Mahal of gyms with $1,500. So hopefully they are as astute. Anyway, thanks to all of you for joining us on this week's edition of The Free Stretch. Now that the schedule is out, now that the draft is done, free agency, all those things, there's not much on the horizon of the NFL offseason except just waiting for the games to start, and we hope that happens soon. But either way, The Free Stretch will be back next week like it always is. There's always plenty to talk about. Thanks again to our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform and allowing me to be in front of all of you on the number one place for Bucks coverage anywhere, print, news, or otherwise. Did I just get a phone call when I'm trying to play my outro music? Unacceptable. There we go. Cannot have my outro music interrupted. By the way, I got an email this week from someone who wanted to know who this was. This is Black Box, and the song's called Everybody, Everybody. Long-time listeners know. Anyway, have a great rest of your week. Be safe. Be sensible as things slowly open a little more here and there, and understand that, you know, we're not where we need to be yet. And good luck to every one of you. I will talk to you next week. In the meantime, that's The Free Stretch. I'm Bobby Fenton, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.